You're listening to Trek FM.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
Welcome. This is another edition of To the Journey.
To the journey!
I am Charlene Schmidt, one of your co-hosts of this program, and with me as always is...
Tristan Riddell.
Tristan, we kept our topic of the week a secret in the last episode, and I think that's because we have a really good commentary lined up, and which episode are we going to commentate on?
This episode is one of my favorites. Not everybody likes this character, but I am infatuated with this character, and I want to see him as much as I can, and that is Q. And this is Season 3, Episode 11, The Q and the Gray, and this is how Netflix describes it. After Q's death in the last meeting with Voyager, a new Q must be produced, and the mischievous Q known to the Enterprise wants Janeway as his mate.
Dun dun dun!
I think this is a great episode. It's a lot of fun, it has a lot of funny moments, and it's just, it's over the top, it's cheeky, and sometimes you need that in Star Trek.
Indeed, and that is in fact why I suggested it for a commentary, because we often throw ideas back and forth to one another as we're planning these episodes, and I just thought, you know what, let's just loosen up a little bit and have a couple of laughs, and therefore I wanted to go with a comedic episode, and I was surprised we had not done this episode yet.
Also, before we get into it, there's a crack in my window, and I don't quite know why. I can't fix it right now, but if you hear a spooky ghost in the background, it's because of that, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow. Tristan's house is haunted. And it's so fitting. We're recording this in October, and so Halloween is right around the corner.
Yeah, and and we're recording Q and the Gray, so it could be a Civil War ghost, for all we know.
You never know. Wow.
Let's get this rolling.
Let's do this thing. All right. Like with all commentaries, if you want to follow along with us, we're going to give you a countdown. I'll say 3, 2, 1, go. And then you can watch along on Netflix or on StarTrek.com or on your DVDs, however you stream or download. And if you aren't following along with us, hopefully we are still entertaining nevertheless, and you can follow along even if you vaguely remember the episode. And I think a lot of people know this episode, don't you?
I think so, too. If you're listening to this podcast, you remember this episode.
Yeah, most of the Q episodes are pretty popular. So let's get going. Counting down. 3, 2, 1, go.
Supernovas, I think, are one of the coolest things in kind of our universe lore, our Star Trek lore. It's just the idea of a sun collapsing upon itself is such hard science to me and just so... It makes me awestruck.
How could it not? Watching a star explode. I mean, even Neelix's overenthusiasm is somewhat relatable here, where his inarticulate expression of awe, notwithstanding, mm-hmm. is quite a thing. Yeah, how could you not marvel at that if you could see it for yourself? It is very powerful.
Yeah, I think so. And we established that there... The third crew in history?
Yes.
Or something like that. And I think, and of course we follow, that throughout Star Trek. So it's the TOS crew and the TNG crew.
Right.
Who saw supernovas.
Yes. Well, there might be just a little bit of nepotism involved there.
Well, I mean, in Star Trek, you want to follow the best of the best. And that's what we're doing.
It's true. These folks that we watch on Star Trek are the cream of the crop of Starfleet. Not just any ordinary officers. That's why we have the USS Hood and the Farragut. That's for them to clean up the mess of our stars. Hey, not everybody can be a winner.
Not everybody is the crew of the Enterprise or the flagship
right.
of the
Exactly.
Federation.
Exactly.
And of course, I mean, you remember in 2009 how pissed Uhura was. It's like, he's like, I am freaking fantastic at what I do and you put me on the Farragut? I just, like, whenever I hear
yeah.
the ship named Farragut, I think about how much disdain was in her voice. The Farragut?
I wonder if all Starfleet officers feel that way. Like, they get assigned to the USS Farragut. They read their duty assignment. The Farragut? Oh,
man. Even the captain's like, oh, man, the Farragut? Oh,
yeah, I got the Farragut. Ugh. So, this bed is a little bit ridiculous. Note to all guys, this is not how you woo a woman. Okay?
With red satin sheets and heart-shaped pillows, champagne.
It's a bit much even for Valentine's Day.
I love that line that he says. He's like, the night is young and the sheets are satin.
John DeLancey is such a ham. It doesn't even matter if it's a good Q episode or not. It's still fun to watch him play Q.
Yeah, see, exactly. That's the thing, is that, like, a lot of people are very critical of Q episodes because there were some good ones and bad ones in TNG, and there were some good ones and bad ones in Voyager. But the thing is, Q, John DeLancey himself, is always entertaining.
Absolutely, and a fantastic actor. If you guys don't know, he also has a small part in Breaking Bad, plays quite the character. If you want to see the more dramatic side of John DeLancey's talent, that's a great show to watch, and if you haven't watched it yet, what the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah, he plays the father of the actress who is going to be the new Jessica Jones in Marvel's Netflix TV series.
Ah, well, there you go.
There you go.
So, we've just had the big reveal. Q wants Janeway to be mommy.
A lot of people, apparently when news of this episode came out, because this was in,
96?
This aired in November of 96, yeah. And so that's, you know, that sweeps week or around there.
Yeah, November sweeps, when that was a really important thing.
And so they promoted the heck out of this episode. I remember that there was constantly advertisements for this show or this episode. And, you know, they released the information that Q wanted to mate with Janeway. And so apparently Jeri Taylor got a lot of hate mail during this episode aired, saying
she,
like,
didn't even write it.
Yeah, I know, right? She, like, everyone thought that it was her fault that, you
poor
know, like,
Jeri,
like,
Taylor.
You can't do this. Janeway shouldn't have a child. Like, Hugh shouldn't have a child with Janeway. This is absurd. You should be ashamed of yourself. And she said, she's like, people just had no idea what was going on. It was all, people started the rumors and then blame me for it. She said it was actually kind of annoying.
Well, I don't blame her one bit. I would find that a little annoying, too, especially if I wasn't writing the episode. Now, granted, she was the showrunner at the time.
That's the problem, is that, like, all responsibilities fall on the showrunner.
Ultimately, I suppose she did have to answer to it somewhat, but still, and I don't know if the rumor mills were quite the same as they were back then as they are now, where we know everything about production these days. Back then, there was still quite a bit of secretiveness about it, and so you could make something up and put it on Star Trek news groups or on an AOL chat room, and people would be like, oh my god, really? Yeah, because you wouldn't know any different.
Now, she's wearing our favorite nightgown.
The pink nighty. You know, I think this would be a fantastic and comfortable cosplay. Have a Janeway in the pink nighty and matching robe, and then Q in this very lush red jacket.
Now, I cannot remember who's doing this. It's one of my Twitter follows, and I cannot remember for the life of me. But she teased on what she was going to cosplay next at the next Star Trek convention. Mm-hmm. And what it was is the Enterprise blue undies.
Oh my gosh, really?
And I think that's so awesome because the blue undies are so iconically Enterprise. But at the same time, I'm like, wouldn't you be cold?
Actually, you probably would if you were going to Star Trek Las Vegas because they keep the Rio ice cold.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah,
they do. So if you're down to a tank top and some basically booty shorts, yeah, you might actually be a little bit cold. At least with the cosplay for Janeway and her pink nighty, you've got the matching robe to go with, and you can use the robe to cover up.
See, no, that's such a good idea. It's like you and your like you and your spouse could go, like, you could go as Janeway with the nighty, and then your spouse could go as Q with his red velvet, you know, sateen.
Yeah,
you know,
with a glass of champagne, and Janeway could have a coffee mug. I'm telling you, cosplayers, this is gold.
That's such a good idea.
You want to be comfortable in cosplay, because let's face it, a lot of costumes are not. But this would be, I think, fairly simple to do, as far as making a costume goes, and it would be comfortable, and it would be lightweight, so if you do happen to be breaking a sweat right before, say, you get Jerry Ryan's autograph or something, you know, where you're having that fangirl or fanboy moment, and you're on edge, it's okay. You'll cool right down.
Okay, so this scene coming up, this is one of my absolute favorites in the entire episode.
It's a good one.
Because this is where Janeway reveals to Chakotay what the personal request is, and of course it's mating. Mm-hmm. And just like, this is the moment that so many shippers like you and I, like, we dissect every single detail, every single nuance. Like he puts his hands down on the desk and just like hangs his head and kind of shakes it. And he's like, this bothers the hell out of me.
Yeah.
And he is clearly jealous here.
Oh, totally. Yeah. The body language is just fantastically done by Robert Beltran. He says so much way beyond the lines that he has. And there's definitely some good Janeway and Chakotay stuff here. She's acknowledging that, yeah, I know you have feelings for me. And he's saying, I know I don't have a right to be jealous, but I totally am.
Okay, now we've established here, and we've established in the episodes, but Q can appear in a room without hearing the whoosh, whoosh.
Yes.
And I just paused for a second because mine's bigger.
The tattoo, and then, of course, yeah, the Star Trek dick joke right there. It's not big enough.
Not big enough.
Mm-mm. And then I love Chakotay's look. Like, you know, I could say something more, but nah, too easy.
It was very much kind of reminiscent of First Contact, where, and this actually aired 5 days after First Contact.
So a lot of cross promotion at that time too. Just Star Trek, Star Trek, Star Trek.
That moment where, this moment is in Insurrection, not First Contact, where Riker shaves his beard and he's like, smooth as an android's bottom, eh, Data? And then Data goes up and rubs his chin and just kind of goes, nah, shakes his head and walks away.
About that moment. I haven't watched Insurrection in a long, long time.
I don't care what people say. I really like that movie. Does it have its faults? Of course. But I think it's very true to the series. I think it's very, like, it's, you could see that being a TNG episode.
Oh, totally. Which is done so well that it's almost done to a fault when it comes to being a movie production, if you ask me.
Yeah, right.
That's my criticism of it, but I will stop there because this is not an Insurrection commentary. Now, how big of a fan were you of the beach holodeck program? We call it Baywatch in space sometimes.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of lazy. I don't know. I mean, I've never really been a big fan of Voyager's communal holodeck programs like Sandrine's or Baywatch in space. It just... I know the mechanics behind it. I know the TV mechanics behind it is that you make a set for the season and it's like, oh, this is where everyone's going to congregate for the next season or two so that we don't have to build a new holographic set every single time.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just, Sandrine's was always just lackluster to me, and this was even more lackluster than Sandrine's. I know you like Sandrine's, but...
Yes, I do. I would want to hang out in Sandrine's. And this is, of course, a very stark contrast to that, where you can still get a drink from the bar rodent, as Q is going to call Neelix shortly. But at the same time, it does feel like a little bit of a cop-out because this is basically just, I don't know, it's too easy in a way. Okay, you got some bright lights, some pretty colors, and some palm trees, and some tiki lamps, and then you call that a resort program.
Yeah, I think I just one episode doesn't even have to be every single time, but just one episode, you know, it would be nice to see some water. All right, just like get a beach shot, you know, like get a shot.
Yeah, come on, you're in LA.
Get a shot of B'Elanna coming out of the water and then cut to her, you know, walking into the resort space. Just like make it cohesive, you know, like Deep Space Nine did that all the time.
They did. And honestly, if you're going to make everybody walk around in bathing suits, just at least, you know, have some fun, like show the beach, show some water, do something fun. And it did come across as just kind of a cheap way to show a little bit of extra skin. And I didn't appreciate it that much. That's why I didn't like the tropical resort program.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I want to see Neelix relax, not tend to her.
All the time, right? Come on.
But it did make sense to me because I'm like, if there was a holodeck, it would be beach programs probably 60% of the time.
Well, okay, yeah, going to the beach is fun. But this is the 24th century. There's a lot of exotic stuff they could be doing besides the beach.
And we did see a lot of that in TG. Now, granted, it was all like matte paintings and everything like that, but
sure.
They really did get inventive in TNG with their holodeck and multiple sets. And whether it was just a shot, you know, like when we saw Wesley in the Dolphin episode showing off the princess like type character. So uh-huh. He's like, and this is, you know, Paraxis Prime, you know, and like you see like floating asteroids, like floating purple asteroids just kind of like bouncing around and everything. You're like, oh, wow, that's cool. You know, like
right.
It reminds you can do whatever you want.
And
in
you
the
would
holodeck.
Think like with CGI, especially, they could do so much more of that kind of stuff on a lower budget.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it was time back then.
This is Voyager was that weird area of transition between,
it was,
you know, practical and CGI and everything like that. So everything
right.
was kind of new.
It's true. It's true. And they were not only figuring out the process, but there was that fine line between kind of like, is it cost prohibitive? Is it cost effective? Or is it cost effective?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is it worth it? You know, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. It was just starting to become better. Or at least good enough to be on screen and then also cost effective enough to where that was the more obvious choice. Now, I'm glad that Janeway, it kind of levels with Q here. Like, okay, what's really up? And she doesn't take this at full face value where Q is saying, oh, I'm lonely. Okay, and?
Yeah, what about it? Yeah, so what? You're an omnipotent being. You can go do whatever you want. I love that she's never truly convinced. And you can see it in her face. Like right now,
yes.
She just kind of like lightly shook her head and had a smirk like, oh, okay, this guy's BSing me hard right now.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. Kate Mulgrew plays this perfectly. And of course, I love that she mirrors back the persuasive element of the puppy right back yeah. at him. She grabs the puppy, puts it right next to her cheek and... Sorry, Q. I'm not buying it. Because yeah. he's trying to manipulate her with the puppy, and then she just puts it right back in his face. Good job, Janeway.
See, it's funny about this. I like this scene because Q kind of uses everything at his disposal. Like, at first, he tried to woo her. That didn't work.
Yeah.
Next, he tried to be quote-unquote honest with her and reveal his true feelings, which weren't really his true feelings, but he tried to play the emotional guy. You know, like the guy
the
is sensitive
guy.
And everything. Mm-hmm. But then now he switched to bartering. You know, he says, it's like, listen, like, you're thousands of light years from home. Maybe I can help you out.
Right. Yeah. He's pleading more to her emotions now. Like, you're lonely, too. And you're not getting any younger. Someday you're going to be past your prime and you won't be able to have a child. And Mrs. Q.
Yeah. Lady Q. Susie Q. Whatever
Susie
you want to call
Q, her. As they called her back in the day. Yes. Played by Susie Plaxton, of course. Doing a lovely job as the female Q. She's so sassy.
I love how Q introduces everyone as Q. Like I love like the way that he says it. Like he says it like he's saying something different. Like when he's talking to our mortal, like he doesn't say like no one acknowledges that everybody's Q. But he says he's like Captain Janeway. I want to introduce Q. You know, it's just
yes. It's like there's
Janeway's
different
gonna
pronunciations
go like, oh,
of Q.
Yeah, like Janeway's going to go, oh, she's called Q. Okay, I get it. Yeah, no, of course.
Yeah, well, it would be funny if every time that they would have to call her Q. With a different stylistic representation for like each different Q, and there's millions of styles you can pronounce Q.
I never noticed that before, that when Janeway hands Q the puppy, mm-hmm. he looks disgusted at the puppy. Like, he doesn't want to hold it. He's kind of like, ugh.
Stupid mammalian. You didn't do anything for me. Go away.
I love how, you know, like, as Q, they have no problem just kind of, like, looking over people's shoulders. Like, he's standing behind Kim just, you know, reading his documents and everything like that. And they mm-hmm. have to just put up with it because at any moment, like, they could snap their fingers and turn them into an amoeba.
Yes. Well, I mean, I guess that is Q privilege, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love how Q puts his head down. Why do I suppose you have anything to do with all these supernovae going off? Well, maybe.
Susie Plaxton makes such a fantastic Q. I'm surprised that it took us this long to realize that she should be a Q.
I wonder if they just didn't have the opportunity for her. Or if it was just a spontaneous thing of, hey, you know what? Yeah, and then she auditions for the part, and of course she gets it. My big disappointment with Susie Q is that she was not in the third installment of Voyager Q episodes, sorely missing. And I believe she, the actress, even says somewhere in an interview or maybe a convention appearance, yeah, I should have been there.
Yeah, I was gonna ask if you knew the story behind that, because I feel like if you, you know, if you ask Susie, she'd be there because she's always been there for Star Trek.
Yeah,
so.
I would think that they could get her, but I'm just guessing with Q Jr., the story in the seventh season, they just didn't write her in, and that's such a horrible misstep.
Such a waste. Yeah,
it is. I mean, could you imagine how much better she would have made that episode?
Now, this set right here, like, we're inside a Civil War era house, very very Terra, and
yes.
It's actually a redress of the her gothic novel or hollow novel, whatever it is.
Is it? Okay, I kind of thought it was.
Yeah, it's a redress of that hollow novel that Janeway loves so much, the Victorian hollow novel.
Yes, yes. And a very elaborate dress, but not the same one from her gothic hollow novel, and yet very Victorian kind of era. They did a great job with the costumes in this episode.
Yeah.
Gotta give them that. The uniforms look fantastic, and
I love how he introduces himself. He's like a dashing young officer, you know, like, or something.
Well,
he is a Q.
He definitely thinks highly of himself. What did you think about this Civil War portrayal? As far as, like, the Q war. I mean, should there have even been such a thing as a Q war? I thought they were beyond war.
Yeah. There's certain times when you need to leave some mystery and you need to leave it open to the imagination. And right now, that definitely is a... Here's the thing, is that with the... Like, when you had TNG, no one even knew what the continuum was. Like, there wasn't even a crumb of material to go off of, except that it's wondrous.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, when, like, with the young Q, like, the in TNG, like, he takes her back to the continuum and says, like, oh, it's amazing, you have no idea. And then, even with Death Wish, you know, with that, it was more of a, it was an abstract metaphor.
Uh-huh. The road in the desert.
The road in the desert, the scarecrow, and we still had no idea what the continuum was like. And it didn't really give us a picture. It was still wondrous to us because we couldn't understand what we were seeing, but we got the idea that they were going for. With the Civil War metaphor, this is much more of a literal metaphor than a figurative one. And so I feel like the more you do that, the more you kind of remove the mystery and the fun.
Right. The whole thing with the road in the desert, they explained it as, well, this is how your mind can interpret the continuum.
Yeah.
And again, you could say the same thing. Well, what's happening between these different factions of Q is that this is this is analogous to your history's Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, and no, I agree with you that it's a much more literal interpretation. I thought the road in the desert was perfect, and this went just a little too far.
I think so too. I like what you said. Like really, this is an omnipotent species and they're not beyond war. They have weapons. Like, they have literal weapons. You know, like, do we...
Yeah, Q weapon. Are you okay? Wait a minute. If you watched TNG, that version of Q would have said, oh, we are so beyond war. Are you joking me? Of course we don't have weapons. We don't need them.
Exactly, and that's the thing, is that in the very first time that we see him, he calls humanity a savage child race.
Yes.
But the thing is, they do that same type of savagery.
Yes, which means they're either extreme hypocrites, or this is wrong.
Yeah, or, like, so I think it's both, obviously, because, you know, if the Star Trek writers write it, then it's real.
Yeah. And the thing is I can see how this is a great continuation from what happened in Death Wish, where the Q that committed suicide, Quinn, created an uproar among the continuum. But does it have to be a war? Could they have not expressed it in a different way that would fit the Q better?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, but I think it's when TV politics takes over. We needed to be dramatic. People's lives have to be on the line. You know, like people have to get injured. You know, like it's
you're probably
all that kind
right.
of business. Now, what's really funny is that, like, we have a lot of single shots between Q and Catherine. Like like while they're filming this, a lot of it is just a close up on Q and then a close up on Janeway, mm-hmm. and then they cut back and forth. Q's focus is always very sharp. We focus on his features. They're very masculine. He has very strong features, a larger nose, and we like it's very crisp. And when we shoot Janeway, the focus is always just like a little bit off, just a little bit. So it's
a little soft focus.
That little soft focus, that little blur to make her a little bit more pleasing. I think they definitely used a longer lens on her face to kind of flatten it a little bit, and it's just kind of. It's
That's
just kind
so
of funny,
funny
that even in our TV shooting, we have our gender roles where she's a little soft focus, longer lens, flatter features, and then we have the much more masculine shooting with Q, where sharp features and, you know, in focus and strong, and yeah. they've been doing that a lot throughout this episode.
And I'm sure it was done on purpose, and you know
oh,
what?
Absolutely.
I did not notice that, and now I'm watching for it. Big time.
Yeah. I know it's bad to just constantly like talk about what's happening on screen, but Tom Paris, I love Robert Duncan McNeil, but I think he's one of the worst people when it comes to fake tapping the console.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like if you pay attention to what he does, he's always hitting something that's not exactly a button.
Oh, he's just kind of pawing the console.
He's just kind of like pawing the console until something happens.
Oh wow. Okay, another thing that I've not really noticed. So now I'm watching that. You've given me some things to think about, Riddell.
Okay, so here's the thing is like I may be underestimating how tall Robert Beltran actually is, because I know that Susie Plaxton is very tall.
Yeah,
but I always thought that Robert Beltran was tall too.
He is fairly tall. I think he's maybe 5'10 or 5'11.
Oh, that's tall? I didn't think that was
well,
that tall.
It's tall to me. I'm 5'3".
I was gonna say, I was like, I'm 5'9", so
I don't know. Maybe 5'10 is I don't wanna say average for a male.
Wouldn't 5'10 be average?
I don't know.
Who knows? Who knows? Anyway, not the point.
But anyway, Susie Plaxton is tall, and she's taller than he is.
Yes,
so there.
Exactly. Yeah, Susie Plaxton is a tall person. And I remember I heard that she starts every single convention with, I hated the makeup, and I'm 6'1", and my favorite episode is this. Okay.
Oh, nice. Get it out of the way.
She's like, let's get it out of the way, you know.
So she's 6'1".
Oh, I don't know. I made the number up. I don't actually know.
Okay. I mean, because if she is, wow. That is pretty impressive. That is tall for a lady.
See, 6'2". I just looked it up. Susie Plaxton is 6'2".
Okay. That's very tall indeed.
Robert Beltran is 6 foot even.
Okay, well, there we go. So she is taller than Robert Beltran.
So he's a tall man, 6 feet. That's mm-hmm. that's tall, but she's even taller. She's 2 inches taller.
All right, got it.
Oh, no, the bun of steel is a little frayed right now.
Yes, the rule is, of course, the more disheveled Janeway's hair gets, the more, like, the worse the situation is.
More
starting
danger.
To look a little ratty. Yeah, yeah.
It's like her spider sense.
Yeah, agreed. Now, I would think with Q weapons from omnipotent beings, would that just not incinerate humans altogether? I mean, if a Q can get wounded from it.
Well, I think that's what he was trying to say, is that if it can make me bleed, just imagine what it can do to you.
Yeah, so just even being around it, you would think would practically be like getting into a supernova with the shields down.
And then it's the end of the episode. You know?
I know, but reality! I don't know, just a thought there. I mean, if we're looking at real logistics, which is another reason why that this aspect of stuff doesn't completely work for me. Because I don't completely buy it. But it is fun watching them blow this setup. I'll say that.
Yeah, absolutely. A
lot of explosions. There's fire. Things are breaking in little pieces.
Yeah, the writer, Kenneth Biller, he did the teleplay. He was talking about how he would have loved to have done more elaborate Civil War stuff. Because if you think about it, like, we don't see any, like, you know, we're inside the set and we don't see the forces outside trying to attack the house.
No.
You know, like, when we're in the battle at the end of the episode, we're in the woods and we only see, like, a handful of people coming at each other. We don't see, like, a huge force, you know,
yeah,
storming at each other like you do in the Civil War movies. But then again, I mean, it's all about, it's TV, you know, it's all about
right.
cost and time. And
yeah, of course, you know. They've got to do this on a much smaller budget.
Yeah. B'Elanna gets saucy right here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, she snaps her finger. Oh, that's right. You lost your powers. Oh, you need our help. Ha ha. Yes. Snarky B'Elanna, I think, is my favorite B'Elanna.
Yeah, I think Susie Q describes her as spunky.
They've got spunk.
Like,
yeah.
Spunk,
I love Klingon
yeah.
females. They've got just spunk.
It is so, like, she is on, do you ever watch How I Met Your Mother?
No, I've not watched that show.
I love it. And I've actually been going through, like, and listening to it during my commute.
Mm-hmm.
And Susie Plaxton plays one of the lead characters' mom.
Oh, okay.
And she's from Minnesota. And it's
the
so
mom
it's
is?
Really Susie Plaxton. Yeah. Susie Plaxton's character
okay,
is from
okay.
Minnesota in the show. And it's so funny to see her play, like, because in Star Trek, she plays such strong and gruff characters.
Yeah.
And in it's so funny to see her as a Minnesota mom saying, like, oh, you'll just love my 7-layer salad. You know, it's just like,
yeah, my tater tot hot dish.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, that's the kind of mom that she is. And it's just so funny to see her play that as opposed to instead of a Klingon warrior.
That's so funny. When I lived in North Dakota, people would always ask, you know, do people talk like they did in the movie? And the answer is no. Minnesotans talk the way that people do in the movie Fargo. Mm-hmm. They've got that sing-songy accent that we just displayed. North Dakotans talk a little more Canadian.
Oh, okay. More Canadian, less Minnesota.
Yeah, it's much more about the vowels. You know, it's not just O, it's O.
Oh.
Yes. Or we gotta go and
go
no.
Out and about.
Yes, people do say it. But anyway, I suppose we ought to comment on the episode, huh?
Yeah, well, you know.
just side notes, things that I've lived through.
This was always felt like the show kind of, it stalled right here. Like, it is like we had all this momentum and then just, bam, it hurtles to a stop.
Well, I don't know. Don't you think this part of it is necessary where Janeway's getting through to Q about what it really means to do what he wants to do? Like, what a child, like, what having a child is really about?
Oh, no, I think the dialogue is important, but I think it could have been done in a little bit different way.
I mean, it's definitely slower than what we've been used to thus far. Yes.
Yeah.
And, oh, the other big complaint about this episode just kind of came up. The Q are beyond sex. Well, we know that that's not true because of Amanda Rogers on TNG.
I have an explanation for that.
Give the explanation, because I think I know what you're going to say.
Okay, here's the thing. Is that Q's, when he says Q's are beyond sex, he's talking about Q sex. And here's the thing is that, like, we know that, like, you know, like, Q, he gallivants around, you know, like, he goes around the universe and he gives this impression that he's a ladies' man or
mm-hmm.
or a playboy, I should say, that's more apt because who knows, you know, who he sleeps with. But it's I feel like it kind of Q is all about adventure and pleasure. And so, of course, he's going to experience the different kind of pleasures that you can get around the universe, and a big part of that would be sexual relations with alien species. And so I think what he's talking about is, like, Q-on-Q sex has not been done in millennia.
Okay.
But and so I think that's what he's talking about. But then when we see Amanda Rogers, her parents had forsaken the Q lifestyle and the Q powers and everything like that and lived and, you know, and lived and breathed humanity. They became human and got rid of their powers. It didn't use their powers. And so when they had sex as humans and
right.
had a child as humans.
Right, yes. The apologist in me buys this explanation.
Yeah, I think it's pretty accurate.
And then, later on in this episode, we will see Q-sex.
Yes.
So,
and, yeah.
Q, you revolutionary, you.
And sticking really, it to the man by sticking it to his girl.
Something like that. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. But I, you know what? If I were Janeway, I don't think I would want to breed with an omnipotent being.
No.
I mean, he's not really selling it. He's like, oh, you can explore dimensions beyond your wildest dreams. Yeah, but nah. Not if I have to be tethered to you all the time and raising your omnipotent, well, half-omnipotent child.
Yeah, think about it. Like, and Vosh couldn't handle it.
Right?
You know, like she was just completely sick of him and had to get rid of him. Like, and I think Janeway would get sick of him even faster than Vosh.
Oh, yeah. And I think Janeway knows that. So, of course, this is just immediately an instant no.
Yeah. And you know that Janeway read up on the incidents with Vosh. You know, like the first time that Q appeared, I'm sure that she read up on.
Well, doesn't she say in one of the episodes, I know about your visits to the Enterprise?
Right. And so. And I'm sure that also included his visit to Deep Space Nine, because that happened before they left, right?
Yeah, it did, because that was the first season of DS9.
Oh, right. So yeah, so she would have known all about Vosh leaving on the Enterprise D and arriving on Deep Space Nine. And so I'm sure she knows all about his proclivities and how fast people can get sick of him.
Right, yeah. And once again, we have to mention that Q did offer to bring the crew home if she would just have his baby. And even that was an instant no.
Yep.
It's like, nope, we're doing this through hard work and determination. Till endgame.
Till endgame. Until the end of the show.
Till my older self convinces me that this is the right thing to do. Helm boy! I love Robbie Duncan McNeil's reaction. Should I really take this seriously? And then poor Chakotay has to nod. Yeah, just listen. Just do it.
Yeah, we get three fantastic nicknames in this episode. We get Chuckles for Chakotay.
Yes.
We get Bar Rodent for Neelix. And we get Helm Boy for Tom.
Yeah, I would say two of those three stuck.
Yeah, I think Chuckles stuck and Bar Rodent stuck. I don't know if Helm Boy.
What? I don't think Bar Rodent stuck at all. I think Helm Boy stuck more than...
I've never heard anyone refer to Tom as Helmboy outside of this episode.
I have. And now Flyboy usually takes precedence just because B'Elanna calls him that. But before they got together, he was Helmboy.
I have to disagree with you on that one, because I've heard I've heard people talk about Neelix a lot as a rodent and as Bar Rodent way more than I've heard that dozens of times, and I've heard Helmboy zero times.
Okay, listeners, let's leave this up to you. Here's a quick poll. Which one stuck?
Because we all know
Chuckles did. Bar Rodent stick, or did Helmboy stick more?
Yeah.
I want to know. So go on the Babel Conference on Facebook, or tell us on Twitter which one resonates more with you, and maybe we'll do a quick count. If one overwhelmingly takes over the other, we'll let you know in a future show.
So... can you imagine how freaking crazy that, like, imagine writing what they're doing down in a log and submitting it to Starfleet. Like, oh yeah, like the captain was away, and so me as first officer thought it would be smart to fly into a supernova right as it was about to explode.
Right.
Any questions? Yeah, what were you thinking?
Right. Did you listen to that episode of Earl Grey? It was a while back where they talked about what if you just read what happened in the episode, and it was basically Picard insane.
Yeah.
Like, okay, really? What is wrong with this guy? I think we could do a Voyager version of that really easily. Like, you did what?
I think TOS had it the worst, because just imagine getting, you know, some of Kirk's logs. But I'm sure that that's why some of the stuff never translated through. Obviously, it's because the writers forgot. But just if you try to have an in-universe reason of why the TNG crew didn't understand, like... say, like, oh, we've never seen anything like this before, but it was something that they've seen in TOS before. Mm-hmm. It's because they're reading this material, and people at HQ are just like, oh, So Kirk sent us another whopper. Let's read about this. Okay. So yeah. He sees someone who believes that he's the god of the sun, Apollo. Can you imagine this?
Yeah, exactly.
And then they just throw it in the bin, you know.
Right. It's basically like works of fiction sent from the outer reaches of space.
It's Kirk's fanfic. It's like, I totally went down to the planet and was a total badass and end of episode.
Yeah, I got the girl, I made out with her, and then I left.
And she was green. She was green.
And of course she was green, yeah. It's fantastic. That's not an uncommon theory either. A lot of people think that.
I think it's a solid fan theory. I think it's fun. Because we have proven, like, through Voyager, that people in TOS days falsified their logs.
It's true.
Like,
yes.
Sulu. Sulu falsified his logs in order to protect Kirk's name and everybody else's name and everything like that in the Undiscovered Country incident.
Right, yeah. Different time, different place.
Yeah, and that was Janeway's excuse, saying, like, yes, it was a different time. It was much more of the Wild West back then. And I just think that's so funny.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think if Janeway were to falsify her log in the 24th century coming back, boy, I'm sure the debriefings were bad enough, but she probably would have been court-martialed if they would have uncovered something, that she had deliberately lied on a log entry.
Now, this is also something else that really, really bugs the crap out of me.
What's that?
And that is, the Colonel Q just said, you're consorting with the enemy in a time of war, and that's a punishment that is punishable by death.
Mm-hmm.
And, or that is a crime punishable by death. Sorry, I phrased that wrong. So the first time we see Q on Voyager, it's all about how Quinn wants to commit suicide. And they're like, no, a Q dying is a big deal and we can't do that. So what they're going to do is they're going to kill Q and they're going to kill Janeway. So we have this evolved race that is above war and above death, but yet they have civil wars and they execute people. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, again, that is completely wrong.
As much as I like this episode and I think it's fun and cool, it totally misses the point of established canon.
I have to agree. I mean, it kind of, forgive me, bastardizes the way Q do things and our concept of them. Because I do not think that Q would execute people.
No, I don't. No.
Even these savage, primitive humans
are above the death penalty. Like, 24th century people are above the death penalty, and you're telling me that Q, that have been around for eons and are omnipotent, believe that, oh yeah, no, we'll just end you.
Yeah, now I understand they have to do this for the dramatic aspect, and we're going to get the massive, like, Western zoom.
Yeah, the 1970s zoom, yeah.
Yes, yes, right before, you know, ready, zoom, aim, zoom.
Zoom.
Fire, and then, yeah. I understand they're doing that for dramatic effect, but still, just the very idea is not right.
Yeah.
So, as entertaining as this is, yes, and it is, it's just, this is where I feel like they started to go wrong with Q.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Really wrong.
A little off the rails. Like, it's a fun episode, and it's a fun idea, but it doesn't really harken back. Oh, zoom.
There it is, zoom one. Aim.
Cocking back.
Lock and load.
Zoom two.
Yep.
And she does the Vulcan eyebrow thing. Like, Janeway does it real quick.
Yeah,
like, I'm about
to
get shot. Raise the eyebrow.
Really good.
That's such an old joke. It's such a trope. Like, Q hears the gunshot and goes, oh, I'm hit.
Yeah.
Oh. it's right up there with, like, somebody's about to get a shot at the doctor's office and they go, oh, that hurts. And they're like, it's just the alcohol swab.
Right, right. Isn't there a name for that? It's not hypochondriasm, but what is it?
Oh, I have no idea, but it's used in television and movies constantly. So, okay, here's the thing, is that the crew has Q weapons and they're shooting at other Q.
Yeah.
What if they hit the other Q?
Yeah, well, and why are humans even able to shoot Q weapons? Again, would that just not blow them up? I mean, think about a regular gun, a human-made gun, and how that can have such backlash.
Well, okay,
after
we
fire
don't. We don't know the mechanics of everything, so we can't really say.
I know, but
the
that
main thing
bothers
that I was talking
me.
About is that we have these humans like, were they just laying down cover fire so that they could, you know, like not be hit? Because here's the thing is that, like, it, just imagine if, like, you know, Tuvok got a lucky shot off, he would have ended the life of an omnipotent being, and it would have reverberated back just in the same way that Quinn's death did, you know?
Yeah.
And
so
I'm
then,
just like, that's a lot of responsibility in one human's hands.
It really is. And then is Tuvok going to go on trial for, I don't know. Would it be unintentionally murdering somebody? Would it be in self-defense?
It's wartime, so it's a different set of rules. I mean, maybe we're analyzing it too much, but the more that we talk about it, the more that this episode doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's really kind of sad because I still like this episode. I guess maybe you could call it a guilty pleasure even. Yeah. But dang it, guys. Dang it. And we didn't mention it when the guys started coming out in their Civil War uniforms, but Robbie Duncan McNeil and Robert Beltran both look really, really nice in those uniforms, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Kim looked a little,
He looked okay. I mean, don't get me wrong, but Robert Beltran? Okay, now that's what I'm talking about.
It's just like in the Hirogen episodes in World War II, like, who looked the best in old-timey uniform?
Yeah.
And that's Robert Beltran and Tom Paris.
Tell you what, they look really nice in uniform. Yeah. Yes, they do. Oh, and we just saw Cusack.
We just saw Cusack. I love how both of them are just like, after their four-fingers touch.
Yeah, and it's just fingers. Like, I was just like Janeway when I first saw this. That was it?
Yeah.
Really? That's so perfect. That's cute sex? Oh, boo. Boring.
It's so funny because, you know, it goes in the opposite direction that you expect it to go.
Kind of, yes. But I also like Q's response to Janeway. Well, you had your chance. Don't go crying about it now.
Yeah.
Like, if she could have just procreated with the fingers instead of the human way, would she have gone for it? I doubt it. But
I still don't think so.
No. No. No, she still would have had to have had sex with Q.
Like, what did Andrew Robinson, he has a funny quote when he talks about In the Pale Moonlight. He says, he's like, you can't get in bed with the devil without him expecting to have sex.
Nice.
And that. Okay, apparently John DeLancey did not like that we saw baby Q at the end.
Yes, I'm glad you brought this up because, yeah, he said that maybe we really shouldn't have seen this ending here with baby Q. And wasn't his reasoning where Q said in an earlier episode, like, just the way that humans get attached to their offspring really disgusts him.
Yeah.
And may he never have to do it. And then, of course, he's immediately in love with his own child because that's what happens.
Right. Yeah, I still like, we came up with a different idea later on. You guys should go back and listen to it because I can't remember exactly the episode, but like I think you or I or both of us pitched an idea that we'd have a fully grown Q son by the by the next time that we see them. And I think it would have been interesting to not see him as a baby and then have a fully grown adult the same age as DeLancey, you know, side by side. I think that would have been an interesting dynamic.
Well, and who's to say, I mean, can't the Q just make up their appearance anyway?
Oh, that's what they're doing. That's the thing. That's why it doesn't make sense to me. You know,
right. Like, so, I mean, yeah, it could look just like John DeLancey. It could have looked like an old man. It could have looked like a teenage Q.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Well, that's the episode.
That is the episode. Hope you guys liked it.
Yeah, we still had fun, even if we did kind of come down on it a little bit. But you know what? I feel like they could have had just as entertaining of an episode without all those flaws.
Yeah.
But the Q and the Gray isn't the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a glimpse at what else is going on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
You did good, Captain Kirk.
Is he in that last shot or not?
Yes, he is. Oh, wait a minute.
Oh.
Oh, wait a minute. Did they pull a Weekend at Bernie's or something? Like, they just hold him up there, you know? He's okay! Well, it's cool!
Earl Grey.
Daddy, do pets have a nexus too?
The Pexus.
Kirk had a dog in the Nexus too, didn't he?
Oh, Butler. Butler is now Shadow. So we have the adventures homeward bound of Butler, Porthos, and Spot. Will they make it back to their owners in Montana?
The Orb.
Well, apparently, and did you find this interesting, Matthew? Apparently,
the Navark reports directly to the prophets.
Which is awkward because they don't always show up for meetings, so...
Right.
Yeah.
Plus, you never know what time the meeting is really going to be, right?
That is true. It could have been yesterday and you might have missed it.
The Ready Room.
Do you think this episode would have been so popular and remain a fan favorite if the Enterprise had been overrun with zebra mussels?
To the journey!
It's so average American. It's like Joe Smith. And no offense to Joe Smith, it's just, I could have tried a little harder. I mean, come on.
Might as well call her Jane Doe. So far, not off to a good start. So far, I'm judging you, Shark.
Give me a moment.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
And I remember like being like in midair, having this conversation with his brother and saying, this could be the best Star Trek ever. And then just like landing on the ground.
Is it a metaphor for how you feel about Voyager as a series?
No comment.
The 602 Club.
The young adult novels have their own framing devices that tie in to The Force Awakens. And I think that if they had put those front and center, maybe even expanded one of them or what have you, I think that would have served the strategy better. I definitely do.
Literary Treks.
Well, that really is the bottom line, you know. And I think it's particularly... difficult with this group of characters because in some ways you're looking at folks who literally are the brightest and the best, right? So in some ways we need them not to have feet of clay. We need them to be so much better and stronger than we are so that we have something to shoot for.
Women at Warp.
There's always a touchstone, and this was as close to a touchstone as they ever got with Pulaski.
Plus she banged Riker's dad.
Oh, Andy.
I'm sorry. I just think it's so funny.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. They are supported in a few important ways. Let us tell you about them. The first is Patreon. We are a listener-supported network, and we need you guys to help keep us going. We want to thank our associate producers of To the Journey, and those lovely people are Kenneth Tripp, Jamie Deuce, Aaron Harvey, and Bruce Lish. I said list last week, and I really apologize for that. And so please forgive me for that. Yeah, it's Bruce Lish. You can follow Aaron on Twitter at GeekFilter, and you can find all of his awesome illustrations that he does for us because he's one heck of a designer, and we have some really cool stuff coming down in the pipeline as well for you. Stay tuned for that. Now, the other way that you can support us, this show in particular, or all of Trek FM, is through iTunes reviews. This is super important because iTunes is still the primary way that people get and listen to podcasts. We asked for some new reviews over the last couple of weeks, and we got them. So, many thanks to Christopher Settle, Derrica Monaco, and Naman 2000, I hope I'm saying those correctly. They came through for us. They all gave us 5 stars. They wrote us wonderful reviews. And so thanks, you guys, for taking the time and supporting the show. If you have not written us a review, please consider doing so. It just takes a few minutes of your time, and it means a lot to us. Now, we have a commentary under our belts. What is going on next week?
Next week is the natural evolution of what we've been doing in the past, and that is Season 6 Moments. These are not the best Season 6 Moments. These are not the most important Season 6 Moments. These are our favorite Season 6 Moments, as chosen by Charlene Schmidt and Tristan Riddell. But you'll have to tune in next week to find out.
That's right. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!